KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners weekly meeting in progress for this week's public health updates, held as a virtual meeting during the pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Berry and Department of Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz will now brief our commissioners and you, our KPTZ listeners.
Good morning, Dr. Berry.
Good morning. Nice to see you guys.
I've been tracking the meter. It looks like we're going up a little bit, so I'm looking forward to your report this morning. I'm sure everybody else is too, so I'll be quiet now.
So yes, we are seeing cases continue to rise nationwide. Cases are up 50% in the last 2 weeks in the United States as a whole, really across the country at this point, led by the Northeast, but also we're seeing quite a significant rise in the West Coast and throughout the country to varying degrees. We know that these case rises are in particular a dramatic undercount because in the vast majority of the country, they don't count home antigen tests in those totals. And based on our own studies here, home antigen tests are about 70% of our positive cases that we're getting in Jefferson County. So we know that looking at the case counts at the country and state level as a whole, you want to really dramatically increase them. Washington State believes that they're capturing about 16% of the positive cases that are out there in their case counts right now. Hospitalizations are unfortunately starting to rise at this point as well, particularly in the Northeast, but we're also starting to see that in Washington State as well, in King County and Snohomish County. Now, the degree of rise is small right now, and we are still seeing that the number of people hospitalized for COVID-19 is lower than it has been in much of the pandemic, but that's a concerning trend from our end. So part of my work this week will be to speak to my colleagues in King and Snohomish County to get a little bit more detail on what they're seeing in their hospitals there, and particularly who is getting hospitalized, because that will have implications for our response here and how we can prevent that from happening in our region as well. Deaths are thankfully continuing to decrease at this point, but we are still losing about 320 Americans a day to COVID-19, which is much lower than the peak, but still much higher than we've ever seen from influenza, at least since the early 1900s. In Washington, as we discussed in the beginning, we are seeing case rates and hospitalizations rise, particularly on the west side of the state, though we're starting to see that move into the east side of the state as well, consistent with what we've seen in prior Omicron variant transmission. In Jefferson County, we have at this point have diagnosed 3,489 cases of COVID-19. That puts our case rate at 419 per 100,000 with a 9% positivity. We do have two of our residents currently hospitalized for a total of 122 hospitalizations in this response. Thankfully, we have had no additional deaths, so we have lost 28 of our citizens to COVID-19. In neighboring Clallam County, case rates and hospitalizations are also rising as well. We have diagnosed 11,406 cases of COVID-19 for a case rate of 287 per 100,000 with a 5% positivity. We have one person currently hospitalized in Clallam County for a total of 365 hospitalizations. And thankfully, we have also had no additional deaths at this time for a total of 111 deaths in Clallam County. So at this point, I would say both counties are in the high-risk transmission zone. We are above 200 cases per 100,000, so we do strongly recommend masking in indoor settings. I think that transition back is going to take a little bit of time. Many people in our communities got the message that COVID-19 was over when a lot of the restrictions went away, and so I think it's going to take a little time to get everybody on board with masking in indoor settings again, but I do think it's a really good idea to do so. We're seeing quite a bit of COVID-19 transmission, and given that we're starting to see hospitalizations rise in some of our neighboring jurisdictions, I think it is appropriate for us to be cautious here as well. The best thing we can do to prevent a serious rise in COVID-19 cases in our region is to get vaccinated and boosted. Our most recent hospitalization is a person who was vaccinated but not boosted and elderly. And so we do still have some folks in our community who haven't gotten that booster. And if you haven't, it's really critical to do so, especially if you're over 65. But really, any of us should get that booster so we're up to date on our vaccinations. We recommend masking in indoor settings and getting tested right away if you're sick at all. Especially if you're vaccinated, your early symptoms might be quite mild and might feel quite a bit like a cold. So it's really important to get tested right away. And if you are positive and high risk, so if you have underlying conditions, if you're over 65, it's really, really important to get treatment right away. And actually, all of our KPTZ questions were about treatment, so we can dig into a little bit more of the nitty-gritty about getting treated. We have been treating a lot of folks in Jefferson County in recent weeks, just because we have such a high case rate and so many of our residents are elderly. So we want to make sure people get access to that treatment quickly. And the best way to do so is to get tested early so that we know that you're positive sooner rather than later and can move you through the treatment process as efficiently as possible. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions from our commissioners.
Do you have any, Kate or Greg, for Dr. Berry?
Kate does.
Kate, it's your hand up.
I do, yeah. Thanks, Dr. Berry. I'm wondering, so I've been doing a fair amount of testing lately because I've been traveling and, you know, I have a tickle mm-hmm. in my throat or, you know, just trying to be cautious. And are we generally finding that one test is enough, a home test, to ensure that we don't have something? Or is it the kind of thing you want to do over a 2 or 3 day period to ensure that you're really safe?
So great question. How do we do testing? Given that so many of us are testing at home without kind of the advice of a medical provider, if you just have kind of a mild symptom and it goes away and you test and it's negative, that's good enough. And certainly if you're testing just because you've traveled and you don't have any symptoms, a single test should be enough for you. But if you are sick, especially if you're vaccinated, we know that your symptoms tend to start very early, and sometimes even before your viral load has caught up enough to turn positive on a test. So especially for our fully vaccinated folks, but really for anyone, if you get sick and you take a test right that first day that you have symptoms and it's negative, but those symptoms persist, take another test the next day, because we have seen people turn positive 24 to 48 hours later, especially if you're vaccinated because your viral loads are low, which is good. Your low viral load makes you less likely to transmit to other people, less likely to get severe symptoms, but you could still turn positive later. So if you're sick, if you've got flu-like symptoms like I did a couple of weeks ago, take more than one test. I tested 3 days in a row just to be sure it was all negative, but we have ample supply of antigen tests right now. And so if you're still sick a couple of days later, definitely still stay home whenever you're symptomatic and take a test again the next day. Thank you for that.
And following up on that, Dr. Berry, you can sign up for free tests to be delivered to you at home still. Right?
Yeah, we still have free tests here. So we have tests at Jefferson County Public Health. We have tests at the libraries. You can still get them sent to you directly from the state, and they come pretty fast within a few days. So you can go to the Say Yes COVID test and you can get additional testing supplies every month. So make sure that you have some at home for when you're sick. We keep a few around here because we get viruses with small people around. So it's just good to have some in your house. We have a lot of options for how to get them. And I recommend not waiting until you get sick to get some, but actually getting a few that you can just have in your medicine cabinet for when those sicknesses arise. We also still have them at the firehouses in South County as well. And particularly if you are symptomatic, do call ahead. If you're going to be going to a firehouse, please don't just walk in to get tested for COVID-19. We don't want to spread COVID-19 in the firehouses. Do call ahead. Same thing with our libraries. You can come without an appointment, but they do ask you to go to their outdoor window, not walk through the library if you're symptomatic.
And I've been in the library and heard people calling the information desk at the library. And so if you have questions, you can call the library and ask.
And they'll help you with the whole process. Yeah, there's lots of tests available, and they're also available at pharmacies, and they're not too expensive. So if you have capacity to pay for tests, that's another good place to get them. So most of our pharmacies have over-the-counter home COVID tests that you can take at home.
So I have a question, because I got a text message today from the Department mm-hmm. of Health saying that I am now eligible for a booster. Mm-hmm. So, and I know we've been checking in on boosters for the last few weeks. Is there any updated guidance that you have about boosters and ages? I'm 51. I feel fine right now, you know, I have my first booster. So I have two shots and a booster. Still feeling fine riding with that, but I did get this text and I was like, maybe I should ask Dr. Berry.
Sure. So I'd say the most critical is to get that first booster. And I think that's really the most important thing, is to make sure that we've gotten our boosters, the first booster. The second booster, still not a lot of compelling evidence that people who are young, healthy, don't have a lot of underlying conditions, need an additional booster. I think it would be reasonable if you are, 75 and up and you have underlying conditions to consider getting that fourth booster, just as a safety precaution, because we're starting to see those hospitalizations rise in other parts of the country. We haven't been able to drill down yet into exactly what's driving that hospitalization rise. We should have a lot more data on that by next week, because that really just started this weekend. So I think it's reasonable to wait as we dig into that. But if you're high risk, so if you've got multiple underlying conditions, say you're 75 and up and you've got heart failure, COPD, all those significant conditions that can really set you back for COVID-19, I think now would be a good time to consider getting that fourth dose. It's important to remember that we do have them available in a lot of places. We have them at Jefferson Public Health. We also have fourth dose boosters at the large number of our major pharmacies. So any of them that are giving vaccinations do also give fourth doses. So there's a lot of places to get them in town if you want to get a fourth dose. But for someone who, say, 51 and healthy, who doesn't have any significant immunosuppression, not a lot of evidence for an additional booster at this point. It's not going to hurt you. Not clear that it's going to make a lot of difference either. I mean, what will make the biggest difference is masking in indoor settings. And if you get sick, getting tested and treated right away.
Great. Thank you.
Can I ask a global question?
Yeah.
Sure, please.
Reading about the surge in South Africa and, subvariants every day, BA4, BA5. Are our models kind of breaking right now? I feel like it's like things that we thought we understood about the epidemiological curves and everything are not true anymore. Can you talk a little bit to that?
I would say, having looked a lot at those curves, nothing I'm seeing in the world right now is actually all that surprising. Whenever we see reductions in mitigations, in mask wearing, things like that, we do see a resurgence in cases. So I'm not very surprised to see those numbers. And certainly there is a lot of kind of subvariant analysis going on right now. We've got variations on BA2, which I think is just adds to one layer of confusion for the public. I would say right now what we're seeing worldwide is Omicron. It's just variations on Omicron. And we're so far not seeing particularly more severe variant in this version of Omicron, but certainly it's highly, highly transmissible. And so I would expect that. I would expect to see a surge in cases. I think the key detail that we are seeing worldwide is that with COVID-19, we aren't able to get that persistent immunity from any possible infection. We aren't able to get that from vaccination. We also aren't able to get it from prior infection. You can get COVID again. If you've had COVID in the past, you can get it if you've been vaccinated. Both of those things reduce your risk of getting it again, and most importantly, dramatically reduce your risk of getting severe disease. And that we're seeing play out. But there are still enough of us in the world, in the United States, in Jefferson County, who have not had COVID and who have not been vaccinated against COVID or not received a booster against COVID. And that's really where we're seeing the severe disease so far. Hopefully that helps answer some of those questions. I'd say our models, this is about what I would expect, actually.
Okay. And then one other global question, and that's just about communication strategies and, encouraging folks to get vaccinated. And I was really kind of stunned to see the vaccination rate in Brazil, where they have their leader, their president, kind of arguing against vaccinations. And yet their vaccination rate is so much higher than ours because they, believe they have a right to get vaccinated. And the trust, the trust with the government agencies is different. And I'm wondering, is there anything we've learned from this that might help us improve our communication strategy to get more folks vaccinated?
Yeah, I think we are always looking at ways to better communicate the need for vaccination. I think in the United States in particular, it's been a bit of an uphill battle for a wide variety of reasons, most specifically kind of a very focused misinformation campaign that is effective and the availability of access to media that can send confusing messages. I think that can be, that's been a big challenge for us. And I think we're still figuring out how to get past that. I would say in the Global South as a whole, we often see more acceptability of vaccinations because many people in those communities have experienced infectious diseases in their day-to-day life in a way that we often haven't in the United States. We don't see tuberculosis outbreaks or malaria outbreaks as often as many of our neighbors in the Global South. And so I think in many parts of the world, they have a very recent experience of getting very sick from an infectious disease or a friend of theirs getting sick or dying. And that recent experience helps people understand how critical vaccines are. I think in the United States, we have been to some extent a victim of our own success in that most of us don't have a recent experience with severe infectious diseases. And so it can be easy to forget how dangerous they can be, but they certainly can. COVID certainly can. And I do think there's still more work we can do on communications to help make sure that people have access to the best information. And I think there's a lot of work we need to do generally on improving trust in and access to our healthcare system. I think that that has also limited our success in the United States, having had this kind of privatized healthcare system that many people have had struggle accessing in their life. That also has limited trust in our work related to COVID as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I just like to remind folks who are in the attendees list, I've seen a hand go up a couple of times, that we don't take public comments during this session. The way you get your questions in for consideration by Dr. Berry or Willie Benz are to send them to KPGZ the week before this meeting. So thank you for being here and your interest, but we just don't have the time to respond to everyone's questions and comments in our short time here with these two wonderful human beings. So I know that there were a number of questions sent to KPTZ last week. So
yeah, and I would say we really welcome questions. I think this is a really good forum to answer those questions. So please do, if you have questions that you want to have answered, send them to KPTZ. I believe the deadline is Thursday before, and then we'll make sure and answer them on air here. Just a couple questions today, particularly around treatment. So just a good time to dig into a little bit of what treatment looks like. So if you test positive for COVID-19, including on a home antigen test, if you are high risk for severe disease, which means if you are over 65 or if you have any underlying conditions, regardless of your vaccination status, you are eligible for treatment for COVID-19. And we do recommend accessing that treatment. If you are otherwise well, have no underlying conditions, and you're under 65, we don't generally treat for COVID-19 at this point, but the treatments are available for everybody over 65, everybody who's high risk for severe disease. The most common treatment that you'll see is Paxlovid, which is an oral medication. It's a 5-day course of medication. You have to start that within 5 days of your symptom onset in order for it to be effective, and sooner is better than later. So that's why it's so important to get tested sooner rather than later, and then to start your medications. In Jefferson County, the way to do that is to contact the Jefferson Healthcare COVID hotline, the COVID nurse hotline, and they'll help you through the process of getting that prescription. The medication does have some contraindications because it does have some interactions with some medications. So you'll need to do kind of a telehealth visit with them to figure out whether or not it's a good medication for you. If it's not, generally the next thing that we recommend is an IV monoclonal antibody, which is called bebtelovimab. And you have to get that within 7 days of symptom onset. We do have both of those here. One of the folks who wrote in said that they had a friend who tested positive and was told that at that time, we didn't have any medication, any of the Paxlovid medication in Jefferson County proper, and that they were going to have to drive to Squim to get some. We do generally have the medication here, but we've been using a lot of it lately because so many of us are over 65 and we've had high case rates. And so intermittently, we have seen it run out at our pharmacies, and then your nearest option is going to be in Squim. I know they have it at Safeway. Safeway, Rite Aid, and Walmart. And so your provider can send it over there. We are going to work to get some back in-house in Jefferson County, but we've just been using a lot of it. And so we need our pharmacies to order a little bit more, and we'll be working on that this week. So you may experience, depending on when you call in, that you may have to go to SQIM to get your medications. I apologize for that. It's just a challenge of getting enough medication to Jefferson County from the state at the moment, but we're going to be working on that this week. We do have monoclonal antibodies in Jefferson County at Jefferson Healthcare, but that's an IV medication. So it's a little bit more complex to administer, but the Jefferson Healthcare folks can help you through it. I do want to acknowledge that that is a big workload for our Jefferson Healthcare folks. We are not seeing a hospitalization surge, but we are seeing a big surge in demand for their primary care clinics, particularly around COVID treatment. So you may experience when you call the nurse hotline that you have to leave a message. Know that that's because they are working with someone else who has COVID right now, but they will get to you and they're moving as fast as they can. So do leave a message, leave a detailed message, and they'll get back to you as soon as possible. Don't hang up and call back, because that makes the kind of throws a wrench in the system. So just leave a message. They will call you back as soon as they possibly can. We're also going to be working this week on getting them some support from the state to try to help offload that workload, because it's a big lift for them right now. We do want you to get treated though. If you have high-risk conditions, we'll make sure that you get access to them. This next question was about if there's any evidence that receiving treatment for COVID with the medication Paxlovid could reduce one's risk of getting long COVID. I would say studies are ongoing for that right now. We know that getting treated reduces your risk of severe disease. We also know that having severe disease increases your risk of long COVID. So it would make sense for getting treatment to reduce your risk of long COVID, but we just don't have the data in yet to know that. But those studies are ongoing at this point. We do have some case reports of people who actually had long COVID who started treatment for Paxlovid, saying their symptoms improved after they started treatment. So there's some interesting data starting to come in about long COVID and how we could reduce its risk. But the most important thing is, if you're high risk, get treated, because you're less likely to get severe disease. And I suspect we'll find out that it decreases your risk of long COVID as well, but we just haven't seen that data yet. So with that, that's all of the questions I got from KPTZ. Did that spur any other questions from our commissioners?
Kate, Greg, any other questions? Nope.
Thank you.
Willie, do you have any updates for us this week?
Nope, no updates from me this week. I guess the only thing would be that we are conducting our response after action, and we have just 2 days left in the first phase of that, which is a survey we've sent around to all of our partners involved in the response. So just a little bit under 48 hours to complete that survey to our partners, if you haven't already. Then we'll be moving to the next phase, where we have some more focused conversations around individual response areas. So that's really it from me. We are a little bit concerned about the fact that we're conducting an after-action survey while case counts continue to rise. But I think that, again, the great work that public health has done, the great work that Jefferson Healthcare has done, making it kind of a core part of their mission, being able to handle these surges and handle the needs from the community. So the kudos to them. We're going to continue on with our after action review, since the emergency operations portion hasn't spun back up quite yet, but we do remain available to help out if and when needed. Otherwise, we're moving on to the next phase here in a couple of days, and I'll be back once that's complete to talk about our improvement plan.
Thank you, Willie.
Actually, can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Just for Dr. Barry, a quick clarification about indoor spaces and the recommendations. I know we're not probably going to mandates anytime soon, certainly not until hospitalizations and deaths increase. But today you weren't really talking indoor spaces, indoor masking in public spaces. You really talked about masking in indoor spaces. So would you talk about even in, private groups, if you're gathering in a group, is there a size that you think that it starts becoming wise to put masks on? Could you just drill into that a little bit more, what your recommendation is?
Yeah, no, thank you for that clarifying question. So I do recommend masking in indoor spaces. The virus doesn't care whether it's a public space or not, but it's anytime you have a large group. And so basically I would say 10 or up is kind of my cutoff for that. If you have 10 or more people in an indoor space, I would recommend wearing a mask in that space. And certainly if you're in an indoor space with people you don't know, so that's where the public part comes in. If you're in an indoor space with folks you don't know their vaccination status, you don't even know if they might come if they had a little bit of symptoms, that's a space where it's a really good idea to wear a mask. But if you're in a private setting, I think a small dinner party is reasonable. But if you're going to start having an indoor party with 10 or more people, regardless of their vaccination status, I would recommend wearing a mask in a setting like that. That's kind of the rough cutoff that I use. The only other kind of factor to consider there is the risks of the people involved. So if I were visiting, you know, a 92-year-old grandmother, I'd wear a mask if I went to see her, even if it was just the two of us, unless I had tested before I came. And so that's another good time where you could use an antigen test. If you're visiting a very high-risk family member, I would, and you want to take a mask off, you want to have lunch or tea, then go ahead and take a test before you go in there. Then you know that you're not going to get anybody infected. Similarly, if I were visiting a long-term care facility right now, I would certainly wear a mask when I did that. If I were visiting a family member where I wanted to take off my mask because we were going to share a meal, for example, I would test before I went into a long-term care facility. We have started to see long-term care facilities affected lately. So far, the clusters are relatively small. And one of the most common ways it's coming in right now is visitors. Because before it was staff, now that we're having visitation again, the most common way we're seeing it come in is visitors. So if you're visiting a high-risk family member in a high-risk space, definitely be sure you keep that high-quality mask on. Or if you're going to be taking it off, test before you go. And certainly don't go if you've had any symptoms or a recent exposure.
Thank you. And then just one quick follow-up. What if you're in a room with that's public, but only has less than 10% of the capacity filled, like we are right now with no members of the public and only people that we work with on a regular basis? I'm happy to keep my mask on, but should I?
Sure. I think there's a lot of things to weigh, and it's hard to pick apart all the scenarios, but I'd say if you're indoors with folks, and especially if you don't know the vaccination status of the folks there, or if you have unvaccinated folks in that room, that'd be another reason to consider masking in those settings. And I think especially as public officials, I think it's also just important to demonstrate mask wearing because people really do look to us about whether or not they should wear a mask. And I think particularly at this moment, there's a lot of confusion about what you should do. And so being clear about that now is a good time to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. I think modeling is also a good reason to mask in those settings.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, but I'm still going to wear my shark mask.
Totally fine. And I think that's another place where you could factor that in. If it's a smaller group, you might be able to wear a stylish non-KN95 mask, for example, in those kind of settings. But if you're in a crowded space with a lot of people you don't know, I'd scale up the quality of that mask.
Thank you, Dr. Berry.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Dr. Berry or Willie before we end our COVID update for this week?
Thank you.
Thanks, you guys. Appreciate you both.
And this is KPTZ Port Townsend. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of Commissioners meeting. And again, thank you for listening. Thank you, Dr. Berry. Thank you, Willie Benson. Thank you, commissioners.